My name is Lauren Qualley from St. Louis University's Reinhardt Center for Teaching Excellence. I am here with Paige Turner, Associate Professor of Communication at St. Louis University, to discuss her recent workshop on interactive lecturing with St. Louis University graduate students in the Certificate in University Teaching Skills program. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful.
I have 5 questions to ask you related to the lecture that you did on Friday. So, if you don't mind me asking first, what is interactive lecturing?
Well, interactive lecturing is a term that I came up with based upon the theories of communication that I've studied, that I teach, that I use in my research. Basically, the idea is lecturing is often terms thought of as one-to-one communication where you're talking at an audience. That's a transfer model of communication that many people in my field have rejected. It's a very simplistic model, and it neglects the fact that people are always simultaneously communicating with one another. So what we tend to rely on now more is the transactional model, meaning that we do this together. Your nonverbals stimulate responses in me, and I should adjust and think about those. And the questions that you ask, like which questions you're choosing to ask me today, affects what information I'm going to share on you. So we're always continually doing it together. So interactive lecturing is, in my opinion, a way to have the control of the course, the material that's going to be covered, while simultaneously acknowledging that you are continually communicating not at your students, but with your students. So you always need to be responsive, always need to think of ways to bring them into the material that you are actually controlling.
Okay. Can you talk about the need for presentation skills in interactive lecturing?
Well, there's a great deal of research that's been done on how to be an effective presenter. Right? We spent a great deal of time thinking about, from Aristotle, how to convey messages in a way that are going to be persuasive to an audience. We know a great deal about how people listen to messages, how messages need to be repeated when it's done through a spoken venue. So what I do is take what we know from public speaking and say, okay, the lecture primarily is me talking one to many. That's a public speaking venue. So I thought about how can we take the principles we already know and apply them in a new context. So things like have an introduction. People are running around doing stuff. You want them to know why it is they're going to pay attention to this information. What's it going to do for them now, later, in other classes, in the future aspects of their life? People also need to have a preview because they need to know what are the things I'm listening for, so that they can mentally check them off as they go through. There needs to be a clear body that tells you what the points are. We don't want people just rambling around, particularly since students know that they're supposed to get something out of this. So if you give them clear points, you can tell narratives or stories, but always that connects back to a point they have in their mind. And then finally, you want to have a conclusion, because people don't always hear or catch everything that you've talked about. It's not like their reading assignments where if they've missed something, they can turn back to another page and look it up again. So by concluding and telling them again, here's what you should have gotten out of the information I presented, it gives them a chance to sort of do an internal check. Okay, did I understand things? Do I know what's going on? And the conclusion also gives them an opportunity to make the material their own, right? So how do you process this? What can you do with this? What's a step that you can take? So in public speaking, we always tell them to have an action, either pick up a handout or do something. We can apply those same principles to a lecture. Go look in a newspaper. Go talk to your friends. Go run a little experiment in your own life to see how these principles or ideas actually work for you. So introduction, body, conclusion helps any listener in any situation, I don't care if it's a classroom, a public presentation, speaking in a meeting, doing impromptu speaking in a meeting, always makes it easier for the listener to follow and get your main points.
Well, in the workshop you mentioned specific techniques of interactive learning. And what are the 5 techniques that you find that you use the most?
They vary, and they're very reactionary to my students and what's going on. Mm-hmm. One thing I would suggest is that you start building up a repertoire of techniques that you can turn to. So if students are looking disinterested or you're not sure they understand it, you can pull from them. One of my favorites, though, is to have students come in and write down ideas or thoughts to a question that then I can then call on them so that they have something in front of them. If there's a student who has is communication reticent or has a problem speaking in front of a group, having that information in front of them really helps them feel like they're contributing, have a positive experience. So just asking them, here's a topic, write down four things that you think about it. Mm-hmm. The other thing that it does is once the students start sharing those ideas is that as they talk about it, and they should be ideas that are relevant to the lecture of that day, I'll actually write down their names and examples in my lecture notes as they're talking, so that then as I proceed through my lecture, I can quickly reference, remember when James talked about his experience with his grandfather? This is an example of what James was talking about. So at that moment, I haven't really slowed the pace of the lecture, but I've immediately connected with my students in general because they've all heard James' example, and in particular James. And they oftentimes come up with better examples than I could ever give, and then I'll use them in future lectures and reference the person who gave them to me. I do a form of pair and share that's a little bit different. I'll have students come in and say, okay, pair up. Ask your partner something you didn't understand in the lecture. See if they can explain it. If they do explain it, well, then you've solved the problem. If you can't come to an understanding of the concept or term or idea, then I will ask them to bump it up to the larger class and we'll all talk about it. Simultaneously, though, I think we should reward good scholarship, good behavior, good developments of knowledge. So I will ask them, if you heard a really good explanation, now I also want to share that and bump that up with everybody. And I might even include it in my lecture notes as well. Mm-hmm. I respond to nonverbals. If my students are looking bored, ask them, am I talking about something and you already understand it? Because oftentimes that's why they're bored. They got it. Let's move on. If they're looking confused, then I have to back up and ask them maybe to explain things or do an exercise that I can hear them talking so I can figure out why is it that they're confused. So watching their nonverbals. The other thing I do is lots of physical demonstrations. I try and move around the room or do things that can help students visualize or engage with the material. So, for example, I toss a water bottle back and forth to demonstrate how communication operates or how we think it operates. I might move to a different part of the room or stand on a table or do something very physical that helps solidify that visual image in their mind as well. So write down their contributions when they come in and incorporate those into my lecture notes. Pair and share to find out areas that they don't understand and to help them clarify it for each other so I'm not dealing with a million questions all the time. Respond to their nonverbals and use physical demonstrations. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of a review summary conclusion too, by the way.
You mentioned in your workshop that sometimes professors or people that are presenting tend to feel excited or have butterflies before lecturing. What are some of your tips that you have for managing excitement, especially if you're going to do something like interactive lecturing?
Well, one of the things is to recognize is that everybody feels that way. I mean, I've been doing competitive speaking for 30 years now, and I still walk in a classroom the first day and go, I don't know how this is going to go. But part of that is actually beneficial because one of the things students say over and over again is they want professors who have some excitement, enthusiasm. So that level of excitement actually can convey in your lectures. The other thing is in terms of preparation. The number one way of controlling excitement or changing anxiety into excitement is by being prepared. Know what you're going to cover, know the material, and know what I would consider to be ditch points or change points or insertion points. So, for example, I know that I have to get to a certain point in the lecture. If I'm not making it, this material is going to get ditched. I'm going to throw it out. So I'm prepared for those contingencies. The other thing is realize that most of your students, and I would say 99.9%, want you to be successful. They're not there to criticize you, to show that you don't know anything. They come to class because they want to learn from you. So when you walk into a class, you're oftentimes seeing yourself through their eyes and what that you think they're thinking about you. And most of the time, they're thinking, I hope that my professor likes me. Right? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you're thinking, I hope that they like me or respect me or understand me. So what creates the anxiety is thinking that you're going to be judged. and they're probably not going to judge you. Other practical tips: reduce caffeine and nicotine, because those will pump up your adrenaline levels. If you get really jittery, maybe running stairs, getting adrenaline out of your body. Practicing helps a great deal. Visualizing yourself being successful, not visualizing yourself failure, because eventually your brain records that. You start thinking you're a failure before you get up there and talk. Mm-hmm. But the number one thing is preparation, and actually believe that your students want to hear what you're talking about.
In your workshop, you put some emphasis on how you end your class, mm-hmm. and you've sort of alluded to some of that already today, but how do you end your classes?
Well, the one thing that is you need to recognize is that students are probably done with a class 5 minutes before the end of class. So as you're thinking about lecture time, it's 5 minutes less than the actual class period. I save all announcements for the end of class as opposed to during the introduction period time, because they're fresh when they come into class. They're not as fresh at the end of the class. They're more distracted. So making announcements is better done when you're not wanting them to think about new course material. The other thing I always do is review the points. If I've written them on the bulletin board, I'll go over them, say, okay, we talked about 5 ideas here. These are the definitions. Make sure you understand them at a certain level. If you don't, we need to do something. Come see me, or we'll work on that. And then I always ask them to do something with the material. So in communication, that's really fun, because I can ask them to go out and maybe violate proxemics, so stand closer to people and see what the response is, and look at how culture and sex differences affect those things. I can ask them to go home and try using new words in conversations with their parents or friends to demonstrate the value of their education. So when we talk about ontology and epistemology, I tell my students, go home, use this word in a conversation with your parents, and they'll know you're getting a value here at SLU that you can say those words. I will have them go look for the ideas in a newspaper or a magazine. So for example, how do we determine what is a good research or a good claim? Go look at the articles. Do they use statistics? Do they cite studies, or do they cite authority figures in those mm-hmm. newspapers? Go talk to your friends. Put out an idea that we talked about in class that you think is controversial. See what people say. But they're small incremental things, and oftentimes then what I can do, so that concludes one class, is I can ask them to report at the beginning of the next class. That acts as sort of a reorientation of where we've been in the conversation, gets us back together so that we can add on new ideas or new concepts at the end of class. And almost always at the end of class, I always thank my students for their good ideas, for their enthusiasm, for something that they've done specifically in the class, because I think that reminds them and reminds me that we are doing this together, that what they bring to the classroom is going to inspire and affect what they get out of it.
Well, Dr. Turner, thank you for your enthusiasm in this interview today. And thank you for your contribution to the Certificate in University Teaching Skills program.
Always a pleasure.